Well, Patrick, thank you so much for your time once again. And I hope to come visit the land one day, but I will email you first. I would love to come visit and see your beautiful property there.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Walt tells me that families can, in fact, bring family members and loved ones from out of state to Herland. Thank you for listening to another episode of Times Like Now. I'm Trevor Collins. I can be emailed trevor@timeslikenow.com. Original music by the letter J, Cody Robertson. Times Like Now can be found wherever you get your podcasts. Good night.
À la ville en fête et en délire, suffoquant sous le soleil et sous la joie. Et j'entends dans la musique les cris, les rires qui éclatent et rebondissent autour de moi. Et perdu parmi ces gens qui me bousculent, étourdi, désemparé, je reste là. Quand soudain je me retourne, il se recule et la foule vient me jeter entre ses bras. Emportés par la foule qui nous entraîne, écrasés l'un contre l'autre, nous ne formons qu'un seul corps. Et le flot sans effort nous pousse enchaîner l'un et l'autre, et nous laisse tous deux épanouis, enivrés et heureux. Entraînés par la foule qui s'élance et qui danse, une folle farandole, nos deux mains restent soudées. Et parfois soulever nos deux corps enlacés s'envolent et retombent tous deux épanouis, enivrés et heureux.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Barbara Mumby-Werther, and we're at the Center for Native Arts and Cultures in Portland in the old Yale Union Building for the show Where the Waters Come Together. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Barbara.
Well, thank you for having me.
Everybody in the art world in Portland knows this old building, the Yale Union Building. It got taken over by a different organization and then renamed. So just give us an idea of who's running it and what people can expect.
Sure. So we are the Native Arts and Cultures Foundation. We are a national organization that has historically been a grant-making entity to support Native artists throughout the nation. Yale Union, in a very beautiful act of reparations, gifted the building to us. They were looking to disband and wanted to do something of meaning with the space. There is a covenant within the transfer of title that ensures the space remains an art center. And so that is where we came in, and now we have the Center for Native Arts and Cultures Foundation.
And what's the programming going to be like for the next, say, year?
So for the next 18 months, we are programming within the space kind of as is, and then we have plans to do a major renovation and then reopen in the spring of 2025. And so currently we're looking at a series of exhibitions and presentations, as well as a national convening of artists here in September in Portland. And we will do those exhibitions until we close, probably in the fall or winter of 2023.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you'll be like a regular gallery that has like one or two artists per show?
So our plan is currently this first exhibition, as well as the next exhibition, will feature local artists. We really want to make sure to establish deep relationships with the local community and highlight the incredible artists that are here in the Portland metro area. The exhibition after that, our third exhibition, will focus more on our national artists. And so we'll bring artists from around the country into the space. And then our final exhibition, we anticipate, will be featuring artists from the Arctic and Alaska area. So Yupik, Inuit artists from that area.
Mm-hmm. So this first show, it's called Where the Waters Come Together. And in the little blurb it says, the exhibition features native artists responding to fundamental questions around cultural buoyancy, biodiversity protection, food sources and material necessities, and the realities of the colonial reshaping of traditional access to waterways and shorelines. Was this a brief given to the artists and they worked on it, or did you say, open call, who's got stuff that relates to this?
I think it was a little bit of both. I think we engaged artists that we knew, that we respected, that we wanted to involve in this opening. And we also knew that the kind of the stories around water is what connects all of us. And then it also kind of pays homage to the fact that our building itself sits on a tributary of the Willamette River. So kind of that sacredness of how waters bring us together. And I think that was something that was easily discerned from all of, not only the artwork, but the people that are involved too.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I should tell the listeners, the plans for the building include having this tributary run through the basement.
Right.
And you'll be able to go down there in an elevator and like watch the water,
yes.
Perhaps?
It's very, very fascinating, the engineering that will take place. But rather than cementing over the river that runs through the building, we will open it up and engineer it so that folks can actually get down to the side of the river and do ceremony and provide offerings and kind of honor those elements, honor the ground that was here before even the building was erected. The reparations that we need to do to kind of uplift the history that was here before.
Mm-hmm. Does this tributary, it's obviously covered as you go down towards the river?
It runs, I think, north to south in this area, so it does run over the Goat Hill blocks next to us. And it does run through some of the buildings to the northwest of us.
Oh, okay.
So I know the Goat Blocks, they had quite an engineering feat to make it safe and cover the river that runs under that. But we're going to do the opposite. We're going to keep it safe, but open it up.
There are quite a few boats and canoes in the show, some paddles. And the rest seem to be masks, abstract pieces, human figures. One of the first pieces as you come in is by an artist called Andrew Michael, and he's Portland-based, and it's called Horizons. It's like a head and a torso shape, but within the torso there are two more faces, so it's like three heads on top of each other, holes to the either side and in the middle. So this is wood painted with, looks like acrylic.
It is, and it's also, it is three-dimensional. Mm-hmm. So we do have 3D glasses where you can see some of those features come to life. So it is kind of a reinterpretation of those traditional masks.
Mm-hmm. So I'll put the glasses on, and the pink and the green come to life. So the green recesses, that I guess they separate out. So these are stripes running between the eyes of the people, and then the background changes too. All around the edge is a leather strap, and then feathers, black feathers sticking out with beads. Contemporary native art, traditional art with a twist.
Right.
What do you think Andrew Michael is saying here?
Well, according to his write-up of the artwork, it's really about how you look through different dimensions of art, and I think that's true in most of these works. We have an idea, a presumption of what native artists do, but then there's those different dimensions that the artist kind of push us through into a more contemporary realm. And I think that's what the beauty of the art is. It's really challenging your perceptions of what traditional art is and kind of leaning it toward a contemporary spin.
Mm-hmm. So he's made these people with blue lips, green and blue eyes, and sort of pink hair and clouds in their hair. So he's talking about, he says, through all of this, our ancestors have passed down knowledge of how to see and honor the world. It's ingrained in our structure from the root to the fruits of our lives as pieces transform and looked at with 3D glasses. On the next wall, there are four oars hanging up, all by Tony A. Johnson. He's from Willapa Bay, Washington. So there's a Chinook paddle. So this looks like a paddle where, you know, the end that goes in the water, it has a notch in it instead. And then the next one, it says reduced scale. So this is red cedar, very finely sanded. The next one to it is a 300-year-old version, another Chinook paddle, also reduced scale, and it's made in Issyk, which is Oregon ash. Moving along, there's another one, another Chinook paddle. This one, the notch is a semicircle instead of a kind of point. Finally, there's a paddle by somebody else called Sherrod Yunker in Portland. It's a Talaha paddle, and it's Port Orford cedar acrylic paint and glue. So it's much longer. It's black with these sort of chevrons on the paddle that turn from black into red. Mm-hmm. Why is Tony and Sherrod, why are they making paddles as art pieces?
So this is more in context with the canoe that's also on display. This comes from Tony Johnson and his family. So the oldest canoe, the 300-year-old paddle, is actually a woman's paddle. And so the way that they're cut, it's for gathering. So it's not only for paddling, and I think also they use it if they're stuck on a rock. It helps to move the material away from the canoe, so that is why they're notched in different ways. And then with Sherrod, that was the first paddle that he made to gift to a family member. So it kind of shows the evolution of paddles and how from utilitarian to more of an artistic piece, but it's also in relation to the canoe that the family uses and how we travel on water.
So tools. The canoe is out here in the main space on the ground floor. We have a canoe that's probably 15 feet long, black, with a raised bow. I think that's the back end, right? The raised end. I don't know which way you sit. It must be. And then the front is a bit lower. It's painted purple on the inside and black on the outside. So Tony Johnson's family.
So these are actual working canoe and the associated paddles. So that his family has traveled hundreds of miles over the water the past 20 years in this canoe. So it's something that is not just beautifully crafted, but it is something that is actively used. So kind of, I think that really speaks to what mainstream society sees as art. For Native people, it's also utilitarian. It's something that we use and utilize in our lives, our daily lives.
So it's craft.
Crafts and culture and history, all of those things that make us from a certain community.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do Native Americans distinguish the way whiteys do about craft and art? They keep the two very separate.
That's probably a personal opinion. I think for me, you know, I think there is no distinguishment. You know, I think we often hear craft, we think of it as something lesser. But I think for Native communities, it is something that is a continuation of our culture. It's so important and vital. It's not something that's done kind of as a hobby. It's really about maintaining our connection to who we are in our history and perpetuating that. So it has this really deep, crucial meaning in order for our longevity and continuance as people.
Mm-hmm. Then once you put something in a white cube gallery, its value changes and its meaning changes usually. So here we are.
With white boxes in a gallery. And some of that is for safety as well, to keep the objects safe. Sometimes we don't refer to them as objects, but as ancestors, depending on the age of them.
Let's look at two of these masks. There's a really fabulous one. They're both by Andrew Michael, also based in Portland. And this is a carved wooden mask. It's a face with a sort of fur eyes and nose and white painted lips, gold studs in the nose, and then the head is almost like a headdress of moth wings. So it's got this gray-brown patterned fabric that points upward like the wings of a moth when they're folded backwards. And then on the very top, there is a bit more wood. It's the tail of the moth. What is the significance of the moth in this case?
So he tells a story about Andrew Michael was in during the pandemic. So the solitary nature of the pandemic, and how a moth appeared to him in his garden. So I think that was the inspiration of this mask.
Yeah, so it was a large yellow underwing, a species of owlet's moths,
And he also says that it helped. It was a tribute to what was happening in Portland during that time, with all of the racial unrest around the Black Lives Matters and people of color movements that were taking place. So it, to him, it gave him a bit of comfort.
And then he says, in Maine, a butterfly moth came to a garden and showed its beauty. So he's really taking the image of a moth, but turning it into a mask. But, you know, it's a ceremonial mask. It's not, something you could ever wear.
Well, it's kind of his contemporary take on the traditional mask. So I think one of his masks is wearable. It does have the mechanisms for someone to wear it during a ceremony. And so I think this is just an example of how you take that kind of traditional art form and make it more contemporary and less utilitarian in that way. So I don't believe this one was designed to actually wear in ceremony, but it it definitely has that the connotation of a ceremonial mask. Mm-hmm.
It does have a steel track along which you can slide the wings and expand them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then Andrew Michael's other mask next to it on the right, it's called Rose's Enchanted Beauty.
So this was actually in honor of his mother.
So it looks like a white face with fairly full lips and gold eyes. The eyeballs are kind of, well, the irises are done in concentric circles of gold paint. This is on carved wood. It's a basswood and acrylic paint. And then this Eurasian eagle owl feathers that stick up from the hair, alternating with, brass flowers. Yeah, mm-hmm. The metal flowers with with a green patina. So he made this in honor of his mother.
Mm-hmm.
He says, when he sees roses, in this time and age, I feel as though I'm in a trance, captured by the beauty of the potential and the dream.
Please donate to KBOO right now during our spring membership drive. Your contribution will be matched dollar for dollar up to $12,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. You can become a member by going to kboo.fm/give, by clicking the donate button in the KBOO mobile app, by texting KBOO to 44321, or by mail to KBOO 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Thank you.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Barbara Mumby-Werther, and we're at the Center for Native Arts and Cultures in Portland at the show called Where the Waters Come Together, which is open now through June 30th. There are two masks either side of Andrew Michael's, and they're by Sean Gallagher.
Gallagher.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice Indian name.
Yes. And he had, just like many of us, have also shared heritage from non-Native communities. So he is mixed race, but he is from the Inupiaq nation.
One of these is, it's called Owl to Person Transformation Mask. And it's alder, red cedar, white oak, acrylic paint, and net line, which I think is that fishing line?
Right there, the mechanism.
Okay,
sort of together.
A string. So it's a white face with these deep-set little eyes. It's very harshly carved, a lot of grooves. And then the whole thing is surrounded by a sort of wooden, an oval. You know, it's a bit like Silence of the Lambs when his head is trapped in that thing. It's like a kind of a brace. And these wooden pegs are going into the temples and the top of the skull. So it's owl-to-person transformation. Is that some myth?
So I'm not sure exactly within his culture what the owl is symbolizing, but it is something, an image that comes up quite often in various Native cultures. Some cultures rever the owl, some fear the owl. So in this mask, so that is obviously what he's speaking to. It, and its representation or how it is created, it is a little bit more frightening version. So and it is an owl to person transformation mask, so it does have that kind of human element coming through to it.
Do you think this would ever be worn?
This one could possibly be worn, I think, by the size of it. He doesn't indicate, but I think in relation to some of the larger masks, that this one probably would be more realistic to wear in some sort of ceremony.
Mm-hmm. And then Greg Archuleta from Gresham. So he made the sun rattle. So that's a handle wrapped in copper wire and then a small drum that's been carved with a face and sort of geometric patterns. And it, I guess it's a rattle for a ceremony?
Right. It's an instrument that you use often for making music. Sometimes it's used in different ways to ward off unwelcomed things. I couldn't speak to his context as to what he would use it for, but the sun imagery is something that often shows up in Chinook artwork, and his style is very much in the Chinook, so that kind of there's a resurgence of this style of artwork within the artists that come from that community.
Do you see all the different tribes of, you know, the Northwest? They got sort of scattered and then banded together and moved around. Do you see them tracing their own roots artistically and coming up with their own, you know, retrieving their own style or iconography?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, it's really interesting as I'm new to the area. I'm from California, so learning more about the different tribal communities here and the confederations and the differences in those tribal communities. And I see a lot of these artists, especially someone like Greg, who's kind of maintaining both a connection to tradition, but also elevating the artwork and kind of pushing it forward to in more of a contemporary frame, but still maintaining the integrity of the work.
Brenda Mallory is a name Portlanders know. She's Cherokee from Oklahoma, but
right.
She's known very well around here from the Pacific Northwest College of Art. She has two pieces here. One is called Common Connections, and it's fused glass. So it's red fused glass, and it's stuck to the wall. It's screwed to the wall, and it's a big rectangle with lots of vertical pieces, long vertical pieces, and they're joined by short horizontal pieces. It's a beautiful pattern. It looks kind of like a forest or maybe like broken ice or something. And it's these different reds and oranges, really sort of two-tone pieces, a lot of darkness around the edges. And, you know, fused glass, you put one piece down and another one on top, and when they melt, they're kind of like butter in a pan. They become very smooth and very shiny. But in contrast, she has a kind of a Joseph Beuys piece next to it, taking up a whole end of the gallery. It's called Nexus, Exchange and Share. It's made of sewing waste, so cotton, sort of cotton.
It's industrial fabric.
Yeah. An industrial fabric, yeah. It's like,
and these are the remnants.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not only a piece that is upcycled, and it's in her normal fashion of waxing fabric. But what's unique to this to Brenda is this is the largest piece that she's done, and she's not known to do installations like this. So this was something new for her.
Mm-hmm.
But it does directly kind of relate to the other piece, the fused glass. And kind of that weaving, the feeling of weaving together, the connections.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how it kind of flowed with how we come together through those connections. And her installation to me also looks either like seaweed or a fishing net. So to me it kind of supports, and it's a good background for the canoes that are suspended from the ceiling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like fishing nets hung from the ceiling or, you know, to dry. It also looks like goal nets in soccer, where there's a sort of a square pattern, but they're joined at the corners, and then there's a extra piece pulling. They pull in different directions and change into sort of hexagons, squares, ovals, and then the other materials are beeswax, felt, and then nuts and bolts holding these black. I think these are thick sort of collars of felt that are wrapped around some of the joins in the net. So imagine a giant camouflage net, and with these mm-hmm. black cylinders scattered through them, and they're kind of grabbing bunches of the mesh and bringing it together. So kind of like, you know, pictures of the way synapses work in the brain.
Right, right.
And she's called it Nexus, Exchange and Share. It says it reflects her interest in the interconnections of life on this planet. Neural networks, underground communications between trees and fungi, rivers and oceans, families and culture. Nothing functions alone. Everything touches something else. We are woven together. The last piece we'll look at is on the big wall at the north end of the gallery. It's by an artist called Sarah Seastream, and she's based in Portland, and it's called They Would Prefer to Be a Cloud Fastened to a Rock. And it's two pieces. It's a 50 panel wall piece. So these are panels mounted on the walls, and they're painted. They have black and white Xerox photos stuck to them, and then sort of green and yellow and red right-angle triangles cutting through them. But then to one side, there are four vitrines with two of them have works made of red cedar bark, you know, woven, and the other two have copies made with 3D printing in a sort of black plastic. So there's a crab trap basket, which is, you know, a small, like a foot tall basket with two little handles. And then there's a dancing cap called the Diamond and Pearls dance cap. And it looks like a little, like a little beanie, but, you know, woven. So then the same thing is reproduced in black, but the cap has buttons sewed on it, and it's fringes and things added. So can we talk about how the two things relate and the big panel piece? It looks a bit James Lavador-ish, you know, in
right.
the sense that there's a lot of drips over black and smears in some of the panels, but then there is a different kind of painting going on in others.
Right, and I think Sarah, she is known for this abstract style of work, and it does, the Xerox images do reference her basket making or her weaving, and it shows her hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see the basket and her hands like somebody's put their hands on a photocopier. They come out white.
And I mean, she's her approach is very ambiguous, so she really wants the viewer to interpret what that means. But I think it is a good juxtaposition next to her weavings to kind of also show, kind of again, the range of traditional and contemporary art, not only within Native communities, but also just in one artist's practice. The replicas that were done by 3D printing is more along the idea of the conversation that Native people have with museum collections. How can we make some of our traditional items available to museums without the museums actually having ownership of the mm-hmm. traditional item? So it's kind of fringes upon a political statement in that way as well, but it is an example of different approaches we can take working with institutions that collect objects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always thought they should just make a copy of the Elgin marbles and switch them up and then give one to Greece and one to Britain, but they're all mixed.
Right.
So you don't know which is real. Which
oh,
is,
that's funny, yeah.
And then everyone will be happy.
No one will ever be happy.
But in this case, these are she calls it nylon 12 powder, is the black 3D printing material. It's a very matte gray material, and the cap is called the Transtemporal Dance Cap Aretha Franklin Reigns Supreme. And the basket is also transtemporal. So is she trying to say, if I make it out of plastic, then it'll lose some kind of a historical value, and you can have it in your museum?
Right. I mean, again, I think when we create something in our traditional ways of working, like weaving, there's so much that goes into that. Often there are prayers and songs. So as they're made, it's not just an object. It becomes, there's a life in there. So to have the 3D printing, we're not giving the life, but we're giving a replica of the object. So then it becomes more acceptable for a museum to own that piece, as opposed to something that to Native people may actually have a living being within them, mm-hmm. how we think of them.
And this Center for Native Arts won't just be about, you know, PNCA grad artists. This is going to have families coming and doing crafts and, you know, just like
serving
you would get at any kind of family center.
Right. Right. That's what I hope. And even within this exhibition, not all of the artists are artists that we have funded through our grant making. So it is an opportunity for us to kind of widen our network and highlight other artists in a different way. And then also, it is a place for families to come and share in culture. All of these canoes that are here have been used with families, so it also, you know, it's not for the elite. The art is not for the elite, it's for the family in that way. So that is my hope, that this becomes a place for not just Native communities either, but the broader community to come and share and be a part of conversations and learning.
What's your title again, Barbara?
I'm the Vice President of Programs and Partnerships.
So if anyone has an idea for programming, they should talk to Barbara.
That's right.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Barbara Mumby-Werther. She was talking about the show Where the Waters Come Together, which is on now through June 30th at the new Center for Native Arts and Cultures in Portland in the old Yale Union building in Southeast. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus.
Thank you,
Barbara,
for having me. Thank you.
Andy Wawa, looks as free.